Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's David Nagel. Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. And I have a special guest on the show today, Marie Forleo, who we haven't seen each other in, 10 years? It's got to be 10 years. Yeah, at least 10 years. Yeah. Who's done an incredible job, like mega success. One of her most recent successes is her New York Times bestseller, Everything is Figureoutable. Fantastic book. I encourage everybody to get it. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you so much for having me on, David. It's a pleasure.
It is seriously a pleasure. I have been itching to talk with you. I saw you on Gary Vee a few months ago. And I was watching you guys go back and forth, and I was listening to you tell your story a little bit. And I've known your story, but I wanted to know if we could just dive into that story a little bit, because I think something that's very remarkable about you, something that I admire very much, is that you started off down this road, like in corporate. You were on Wall Street, you were doing that whole thing, you were trying to fit in. And yet at some point, something clicked for you and you started following your own path. And I think that that's an amazing thing. And I'd like to kind of dive into that. So could you start off by telling everybody what was the deal? How did you get on the road into corporate, and then what got you in a different path?
Yeah. You know, when I was an undergrad, one thing I realized was that I was a human with a lot of energy. And the thought of being behind a desk didn't sound like the right fit at all for me, but I really wanted to be in the middle of all the energy and the excitement and the action. And as a result of actually being a bartender and a waitress in an Italian restaurant in Short Hills, New Jersey, I got an opportunity to get a full-time job on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street. And I was so excited. I was so grateful. It was an incredible chance to just start making your way in the world after college. And I remember being on the floor and just looking around and trying to get a scope of what was happening. And there were a few things that really stuck out in my mind. One of them was that even though the folks I worked with made an enormous amount of money, and we will talk a little bit about money. It was always an ambition of mine. I did not grow up with any. It was a source of a lot of pain, scarcity, stress, all that stuff. So one of my goals was to make enough so that it wouldn't be stressful anymore. Okay. So these folks were making, like, you know, what I felt like were a bajillion dollars. Yeah. And yet they weren't happy. They were pining away for these like 2 weeks out of the year when they would get to take a vacation. And I remember hearing this little voice inside of me, David, was like, this isn't who you are, Marie. This isn't what you're meant to do. This isn't who you're supposed to be. You can't keep this job. And I'm starting to feel inside. I'm like, I don't know what this voice is. What does this mean? I need to earn a living. I don't have a trust fund. Like, you need to stay at the job.
Right.
And months would go by, And that little voice kept getting louder and louder until one day, I remember going to work and I had what I think was a panic attack. I remember feeling like dizzy. I couldn't breathe. I said to my boss, I was like, hey, I need to go out and get a coffee. Is that okay? He's like, yeah, go ahead. And I just graduated from Seton Hall University, which is a Catholic university. I'm raised Catholic. So I didn't go out to get coffee. I made a beeline for the nearest church. That was Trinity Church, because really? In a crisis, I was just trained to look up and ask for a little guidance. And yeah. I remember sitting on the steps of the church, crying my eyes out because I felt like such a loser. Here I was, first in my family to go to college. I had this incredible opportunity to work on Wall Street, and this voice in my head is telling me you're supposed to quit. And now I'm having a panic attack because I can't stand being there. And I didn't know what to do. And the first clue I got was to call my dad. So I pulled out my flip phone, if you remember those, and I called my pops because I didn't want to bring shame and embarrassment to my family because they had worked so hard to put me through college and it wasn't like there was a plan B. So I'm just doing the ugly cry with my dad and I'm so sorry and I can't stand it. And he's broken and he's like, Ray, calm down. He's like, you've been working since you were 9 years old. I'm not worried about you figuring out how to put a roof over your head. If this job is making you so sick, he's like, look, this is the lesson you need to learn. You're going to work for the next 40 or 50 years. You have got to find something you love. And if this job isn't it and it's making you this sick, then go figure out what it is that you do love and don't stop looking until you find it. And that was basically what he told me. So it wasn't like, here's what you should do. It was just like, this isn't working. And that was a huge permission slip. And I remember hanging up the phone, and even though I had no clue to find what I was meant to do in the world, I did know what he said to be true. It rang true in my soul. And I think it was like a week or two later, I gave my notice and I went on a bit of an odyssey to try and figure out, well, who am I? What am I supposed to do? And I only thought to look at, well, what did I love to do as a kid? What do I feel are my strengths? And I was really passionate about both business, small business. My dad was a small business owner, but I was also really, really creative. At one point, I thought I wanted to be like an animator for Disney or a fashion designer. So I was like, okay, how do I combine these worlds of business and creativity and art? First thought that came to mind, magazine publishing. Oh, there's the commerce side of advertising. There's the editorial side. Bingo, let's try this. So I got hired by a temp agency in New York City and got a position at Gourmet Magazine that was part of Condé Nast Publications, right? One of the biggest publishing houses in the world. I'm like, okay, this is going to be awesome. I remember going to work. It was a completely different environment than Wall Street. Very buzzy, very creative. And I loved my boss. She was awesome. And I remember, David, like maybe a month into that job, those little voices came back. The ones that said, Marie, this isn't who you are. This isn't what you're meant to be. This isn't what you're meant to be. I'm like, no, not again. And I tried to take a step back and really understand. I think I was there probably like 6-7 months. And I looked ahead at my boss, who was an account executive. And I was like, huh, I don't aspire to become her. I don't want her job. And then I looked ahead at the ultimate ladder, which was the publisher of that magazine. She was an amazing woman. I didn't want to become her either. And I was like, okay, well, if I don't want to have their jobs, what am I doing wasting their time and mine? So I thought to myself, well, maybe I picked the wrong side of publishing. Maybe this is still too numbers heavy, right? Wall Street's all numbers, returns, ad sales, and this side. Maybe I belong on the editorial side, the creative side of the magazine world. Okay, fine. I go to HR and I said, look, the next time you have an entry-level position at any editorial side of the magazines, I'm your girl. So position came up at Mademoiselle, which at the time, top fashion magazine, women, it was great. It was like, oh my God, right, this is going to be it. I'm going to be working with photographers and designers and, you know, new businesses and going on photo shoots and fashion shows. Cannot be better. This has got to be the fit for me. So I started working there. And at first it was lovely because it was new. And then you know what happened? Those voices came back again. It was like, I was starting to get bored. It's like, Marie, this isn't who you are. This isn't what you're meant to do. This isn't what you're meant to be. And I will tell you, David, it was at that point, like I thought something was broken in me.
Yeah.
Nothing made sense. I had graduated the valedictorian of my class. I'm a very, very hard, diligent worker. I want to work. And yet I keep wanting to quit all of the jobs that I'm having because they all feel like I'm dying this slow death. Nothing made sense. One day I was at work and I was online and I stumbled upon an article about a new profession at the time that was called coaching. You got to get, this is like 1998, 1999. Okay. Yeah. So the world had not heard of it yet.
Right.
And I read this article about this profession where you could work from anywhere and you could support people and help them and partner with them on bringing their biggest dreams to life. And David, when I read that article, something in my soul lit up like a Christmas tree. It was like, oh, like the clouds parted and little angels and cherubs with the trumpets.
And that, you've never heard of this at all. You never heard,
I never heard of it. Okay. I never knew anything about it. I didn't even know that that could be a real thing. But here's the deal. I was like 23 at the time. I'd graduated early. And so even though my soul was so excited by this, my mind said, you're 23 years old. Who in their right mind is going to hire a 23-year-old? You haven't even lived life yet. You keep quitting your jobs. You're in massive debt. You don't know what the hell you're doing. This is going to be one more thing you're going to fail at. And what is a life coach? That is the cheesiest sounding thing ever. So I had both those voices going on in my head. So I went home. And I signed up for a 3-year coach training program because I was so lit up by it, right? It was all done by teleseminar at that time.
Right.
It was called Coach University. And I went back to my job at the magazine during the day. Fast forward about 6 months, I get a call from HR. They have a promotion for me at Vogue. More money, more prestige, like a whole career path. That was my fork in the road. Do I stay on the safe corporate path with the health benefits and the paycheck and a job that most people can understand and respect? Or do I quit and do this weird life coaching thing that I have no idea how to do? I feel completely insecure. I have tons of debt and no clue how to do this. So of course I quit my job and decided to do the thing I had no idea how to do, but it felt right. And I went back to waiting tables. I went back to bartending. I went back to doing every odd job you could possibly imagine while I figured out how the hell to build a coaching practice from the ground up during the day.
Now, were you talking to anybody, your parents, friends, boyfriend, like anybody at that time about what you were going through?
You know, I did and I didn't. So like I had told my parents, you know, oh, I'm at the magazines now and stuff like that. And my parents, God bless them, you know, I basically stay out of their hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they had a high degree of trust that I was probably going to ramble around for a while, but eventually I'd figure it out. but I didn't talk to them about the emotional bits of it. And honestly, I didn't have many friends at that time that were on a similar path. Everyone was so kind of rooted in a corporate idea of growth, and like people were getting married and like starting to plan adult lives. And I just felt kind of off to the side. And it was actually through my coach training that I started to build friendships with people online that were in a similar headspace and heart space. And that's where I started developing friendships, that people who got it, because I just felt like a freak over on the side.
And then, and also that was your, that then there was a whole nother level of personal growth that you're going to go through going through the coach training, right?
Yes. And, you know, I just, first of all, you know, worked with anyone that would possibly let me coach them for free. I would beg people, like, just please, is there anything in your life that you might want to change that I could just be a support on? You don't have to do anything. I'm like, I will coach your dog if I can. I just was trying everything I could think of just to get as much practice as possible and to see if I actually had any skills, which I believed I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I signed up for Toastmasters to try and develop some confidence in public speaking. But along that way, when I was working with practice clients, bartending, and doing all of this personal development work myself, one of the things that I realized was that I didn't like even just calling myself a coach. That phrase never quite felt right to me. It also felt quite narrow and limiting. I love a lot of things. At that time too, it was like, I was very passionate about fitness and dance, specifically hip hop. I loved spirituality. I loved the idea of this new world of digital business, which again was tiny, tiny, tiny back then, and almost non-existent. Social media didn't even exist yet. You know, speaking and writing and publishing. And then there was the personal development aspect, but I also really loved marketing and business. And I was learning more about that. And I felt so scattered. Like when people ask me, the worst question you can ask me was what I did for a living. Because I never had a good answer. I never felt proud of myself. And I remember like having so many legal pads, David, where I would try and write out like that one statement, like I help people with X, Y, and Z. And I was like, oh, I can't do it. It just never worked. And then I got a gift from the career gods that changed everything. One day, this little phrase appeared in my mental theater that was this, and it gave me a whole new context. Multi-passionate entrepreneur. I remember one day being at the bar and people always ask bartenders, so like, what do you do? Are you an actress? I was like, no, I'm not. I have a coaching practice. Here, do you want to sign up for my newsletter? But one time I said, I'm a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I was like, what does that mean? Nobody knows. I just made it up. And so I got a chance though to say, I have this coaching practice. And at that time, I'm starting to teach these fitness classes. I also work here at this restaurant. And it gave me this new context through which that I saw myself, which then gave me a new confidence to talk about who I really was in a way that didn't fit into a conventional box. And that was really a turning point for me.
So that opened the door to a lot of things for you, right?
Oh yeah. So I didn't have any formal dance training as a kid. Like, you know, I just used to dance around the house in my socks like most of us did.
Yeah.
But when I was 25, I was just taking a lot of fitness classes at the gym. And then my teachers were all like, you're really good. Why don't you teach? And I was just like, wait, me? What? I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And when I really made fitness and dance like a regular part of my life, and it actually became a part of my career, I think what happened for me is I realized how magical movement is. And I think for all of us, and certainly for me in specific, so much creativity lives in my body. I'm a very physically oriented person. And I think movement is such magic. And when I started doing that more often, it was like my brain opened up to all of these new possibilities that I never saw before, because it felt like it was all confined and all locked in. But it really also gave me confidence in terms of being in front of people and leading people and being able to communicate and teach in the front of the room when you're teaching dance to people that don't even speak English, because I traveled around the world doing that. So there were so many different aspects, even doing like sometimes in Targets or Walmarts around the world, you might find a DVD, an old school fitness DVD with my butt on the, you know, on the cover, like, hey, you know, like dance off the inches or whatever, the four fitness DVDs I did. But a lot of that experience on camera, I didn't know it at the time, but it was prepping me for what I would do later in terms of Marie TV or creating online programs where I'm primarily teaching on video and things like that. So it was a really interesting journey that set me up for who I am today.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But you didn't take, I think one of the things that I appreciate you about you a lot is that you didn't take a traditional coaching path, right? Yeah. Like you don't even coach people personally, do you?
Not anymore,
right? That's what
I thought. In the beginning, I did. When I started off, I had a one-on-one practice for years. So that was like kind of where I started. And I loved it. I loved working with people. But then I started to really understand a couple things. One, I always had really big ambitions when it came to financial freedom. You know, I talked about that in the beginning a little bit because there was so much pain around money in my family growing up that the promise I made to myself was that I wanted to earn enough that money would never be a source of pain or stress for myself or my family or my community again. Like as much as I could create, I wanted to share. And I realized very quickly with the one-on-one model that there was a limitation to how many people I could impact. And how much it felt small. And so when I realized that I could teach one to many, I was like, oh, wow, this is really fun because it reminded me of group fitness and the energy that happens when you teach one to many. And I really like that because I feel like there's so much more opportunity for learning. So now I don't coach people one-on-one anymore, but I really love working with groups of people because I just think it's so dynamic.
Is that when you created B-School?
So I created B-School. So this is my 11th year. We're 2020 right now.
This is 11 years, seriously?
Yeah. So we have now over 65,000 graduates from over 600 different industries and I think 141 countries.
Wow.
And I created B-School. So this is the 11th round. I don't know how the years work out, but it's in that zone. So that far back. And it was honestly in response to, I was in the fitness world and going around and people would say, how are you doing this? Like, how do you have this coaching practice? And you wrote this book and you don't seem like you're, you know, totally crazy. And I said, because I understand sales and marketing. And they're like, oh no, you know, I have an idea for something, but sales and marketing, I want someone else to do that. I'm the idea person. And I remember David going like, I wanted to shake them and I want to say, no, like A, you have to embrace sales and marketing and B, it doesn't have to be this slimy, manipulative, aggressive thing that is devoid of your values of or of who you are as a human being and your heart and your soul. I was like, all this can go together and you need to embrace it if you want to thrive as an entrepreneur. And I just remember in the early days going to conferences, and again, I love all people, I love men, but 99.9% of the folks on the stages were men.
They were.
And I was like, 100%. Hey, this is unbalanced. I was like, there's an opportunity here. I also didn't see a lot of use of humor, to be really honest with you. And I'm a very humor-filled kind of person. I like things to be playful. I learn best when I'm in a playful mode. And so I created B-School really because I believe in the power of entrepreneurship and of small business owners. And I wanted people like me who don't have high levels of education, like no MBAs or not necessarily people who are like, we know how to do these things.
Yeah, right.
Who start stuff at their kitchen table who are like, I think I got something here, but I have no idea how to put it all together and make it work. I was like, oh, you're my people. Yeah. Let me help you.
And then did it take a long time for that to take off?
Like
it's hard to find somebody today in our industry that hasn't been through B-School, right? So, like walk us through that. How'd that go?
Yeah. So I had done other group programs. Like the first program that I had ever done one to many, like not doing just one-on-one coaching, was Productivity Secrets for Creative Entrepreneurs. That was like the first group program I ever did. And I really loved it. I remember I had 40 people in that class. And David, that blew my mind. Really? I was like, oh my gosh, 40 people saying yes to something I was doing. I was like, this is heaven. This is amazing. Yeah. And I love that experience. And then I did a few other group coaching experiences that went into like a couple of hundreds. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. I loved being with people from all around the world, but it was virtual. And to be able to connect cross culture, it was just phenomenal. And I kept feeling in my heart, because I was working mostly on personal development, but always business stuff would wind up slipping in and people would ask me questions about business stuff. And David, I felt so insecure talking about business. I'm like, I know what I'm doing and practicing for me, but I have no right to talk about this because I'm not an MBA. I'm not a traditional entrepreneur. And I will tell you this, I don't know if you can relate to this or maybe you've heard this in your audience, but I felt this great deal of shame because I didn't feel like a real entrepreneur because I wasn't an enterprise level.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like, she's a lifestyle entrepreneur. It's like a poo-poo kind of thing. And I was right.
It's not real.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
Exactly. Yep.
And so there was a lot of hesitation there, but I had so many people asking me about it and all of these different confluence things. I was like, God, I think I can create something that I wish I had when I first started that would have explained sales and marketing in a way that I could have just dove in and created value and made a difference and made my business more successful faster if I would have known these things. And the first class, gosh, I think it had like 200 people in it. And then it grew steadily from there. And it's grown into, like, I never thought it could be, I had no vision that it could be what it has become. Same thing with like Marie TV or anything like that. People are like, did you always see that for yourself? I'm like, absolutely not. I just am such a nose to the grindstone kind of human. Uh-huh. That I follow my instinct and I'm like, oh, I have an opportunity here to create something that I really think can help people solve a particular problem in a particular way. And then these things seem to organically grow on their own. And I'm like, how did that happen? That's amazing.
Yeah, so. Seriously. Do you think your understanding of the rhythm of sales and marketing comes from you being a kid working in the restaurant and working with people?
You know, I used to love when I was a kid, and I still do, infomercials. So seriously? I have home videos. Yeah. Don't know why. Have okay. no idea where it came from, but I was obsessed with like, so my parents are the kind of parents who made like lots of home videos, right? Yeah. And there's videos of me basically pretending to sell face cream, pretending to sell, who knows, like something that I just saw on TV. And I was like, I want to make thy version like that. And I was just always fascinated by the whole pitch, the hook, here's the social proof, but wait, there's more. One of my favorite lines ever. I still, David, to this day, I can watch an infomercial and get so much pleasure out of just like looking at the format. Do you know what I mean? Just like watching how they construct an entire emotional experience to get someone from point A to point B. I think I learned about creating outstanding experiences from my dad. So my dad, this is on a different level, not necessarily the marketing piece, but the delivering piece. So he ran a small printing shop. And I remember sometimes having to go in with him at nights or on the weekends to get these like big printing jobs done that were on deadline. And I just remember him going like, well, these are my customers, right? Like I over deliver for them. And if you don't take good care of your customers, somebody else will. And I just remember drilling this experience of like making sure things were like really well done. And like with this extra level of love. And I don't know if it's the Italian American, you know, it's just
probably,
like
yeah.
thing that you do when you take care of your customers. And so I think that comes into a little bit. And then probably, you know, again, my obsession with infomercials plays a part in it too.
What would you say, first of all, what were your biggest challenges and how did you get through those challenges where you really didn't have a vision forward? It was more of a feeling and you were trying to find something. How did you get through that?
So some of the initial challenges, especially when I didn't have a vision, I will tell you this. I remember feeling, again, broken. I was like, everyone was talking about like, you have to have this vision, this grand vision. What's your 5-year vision or your 10-year vision? I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing tomorrow. Like, like my brain didn't work that way yet. Right. It was like, it felt like something wasn't there. And I was searching for it. And I would write in my journal and have these kind of angry pleas to God, like, help me, like, what's wrong with me? I think the way that I worked through it were a couple things. One, because I had kind of failed so many times in the corporate world and it was so miserable, David, I knew I couldn't go back there. I couldn't. So I was like, however long this takes, I will keep bartending and waiting tables and do any honest work to not go back into that box of a corporate environment. Yeah. So there was that emotional reality of pain that I couldn't go back to. And then I think one of the other things that really helped sustain me was I consider myself a lifelong learner, and I would love going to events like the events that I met you at. Anytime I could go to a conference, go to some place where someone was telling me and I could see examples of other people, mutual friend of ours, right? Allie Brown, like there were just people. I was like, oh my gosh, they could do it. And you know, I remember, Mark Victor Hansen, just reading books and seeing people that had made it. And those people were like inspiration to, you know, like just a little guidepost that said, well, if they could do it, that means it's possible. And I got to keep going. So continuing education was huge, really, really huge. And seeing other people and their examples gave me hope and gave me like something to reach towards.
And I think all of those people had stories that were similar to our backgrounds, where they basically started with nothing. Yeah. There was hardship, and they figured out one step at a time how the regular world was not working for them. Yes. And they needed to go do something else. I mean, I was raised Italian, I was raised Catholic, the whole, so I understand the entire background. And I think that what's interesting is that there's so much. It's still amazing to me when I come across someone who, right, I think I do understand their background. And I wonder, how did you get over the voices in your head that you grew up with hearing all the time, especially from Jersey, being Italian, being Catholic? I know those voices are there.
Yes.
Right. And how did you manage to like quiet those down? And what one thing though, like that thing, that gift your father gave you, that he told that to you, I think that's really, that had to mean a world of difference to your journey.
It was priceless. I mean, you know, the example that he set and the example that both my parents set, they're just, their work ethic is everything. And they just never back down from a problem. You know, like any kind of problem that comes up, something breaks in the house, something breaks with the business, something goes down with family, you know, anything, you just like, you don't back away, you lean into it. And you're like, okay, what do we do now? We got this. My dad's, one of his favorite phrases is no problem. He always, no matter what happens, he always like, no problem. No, like that's literally, David, how he, it's just like, all right, good, no problem. I'm like, I love this guy. Anyway, in terms of those voices, they still, I think, you know, I'm in my 40s now, right? Yep. And I love getting older because I just feel like so many of the insecurities and so many of those voices from the past just begin to fall away because I don't even know the reason why, but I, even in my 20s, so much of my 30s, really battled against just not feeling good enough, to be honest with you, and not feeling like even any of the success that I worked hard for, that somehow, I don't know, someone was going to find me out. It wasn't the real deal. She doesn't really know what she's talking about, all that kind of stuff. And there's just something that I think happens, in my experience at least, is now I just feel, you know, my company, I think there's like 40 of us. And I have these beautiful humans that I'm responsible for. And I love that. And I see their lives flourishing and I see them reaching their personal and financial goals. And you know what I mean? Just watching people evolve, and something in me in that has settled. And so there were no magic tricks. One of the things that I make a practice in terms of the voices is the simple truth that in any given moment, I'm either got my intention on myself and what other people may be thinking about me, how they may be judging me, what they're saying, what they like, what they don't like, or I'm in service mode, meaning I'm engaged with you, I'm present, I'm listening, or I'm writing a new piece of content, or I'm leading my team or having a discussion. But those two things can happen at the same time.
Right.
So if I am ever lost up here with my attention on myself going, what do people think of me? Do they like me? Am I not a real entrepreneur? Mm-mm. nope, that is a compassionate alarm that I've disengaged from the present moment. And in that instance, I'm no longer being of service, nor am I being fulfilled and feeling good. So it's kind of like a little bit of a compassionate alarm clock, if that makes sense.
That totally makes sense. Thank you very much for that. What are you doing now? What's new in your life and your business now? Where are you going?
Well, currently as we're recording this, we're in this extraordinary global experience together. And right when everything shifted and everything started to get closed down, we were just about to have a new Marie TV shoot back in New York City. So right now I'm recording, I'm here in Los Angeles, and we're like, okay, well, that's not going to happen. So I'm going to start making a show from my kitchen. So making a show from the kitchen, I've started to get into just starting my next book. We're wrapping up B-School for this year. And then our next program, one of the other things I'm really passionate about is helping people find their voice. I noticed this in B-School, actually. So many incredible creatives and entrepreneurs who have these wonderful products and services, right? Hard workers. They love what they do. They're dedicated to service, but they weren't getting the results. I'm like, what's going on here? And I noticed they were kind of failing on their copy, the way they were communicating about their products or their services or their message. Like there was just a disconnect between how amazing they were and their ability to articulate that in a way that inspired people to action. Okay. And I was like, oh, we can solve this. I was like, this is about copywriting training. This is about teaching people, you know, this very real skill set that none of us are taught, right? Nobody teaches you that in school. You're taught how to write in terms of English class. And most of those rules are the complete opposite of how to write copy that connects emotionally and that sounds human and that actually inspires people with your words to take an action that's good for you and good for them. So we have a program that's called The Copy Cure that's coming up, and we have a free 7-day writing class. It's always available. If people go to thecopycure.com, it's really fun. You just get really simple tips that help you unlock your authentic voice so you can write effective copy that actually sounds like you. It doesn't sound like an infomercial. It doesn't sound like, but wait, there's more.
Yeah, more. Exactly. Okay, that's cool. That's very cool. So your studio is in New York? That's Marie TV? It's in New York?
Yeah. So that's where we usually shoot Marie TV. Sometimes we'll shoot on the road. The studio in New York City is awesome because I always have these ideas of like, oh, we're going to explain a concept and I think I should be wearing a wig and we should kind of do a music video with that. So we have a green screen and, you know, we have space to kind of play there, which is awesome. But to be really honest, this entire experience is having me rethink how we're doing everything. I'm having a lot of fun with the podcast. We're kind of doing some new twists there. And it just feels like this feels like such a shakeup. Like I don't want anyone, I'm sure your listeners feel the same way as you do. I don't want to see anyone in pain and I don't want to see anyone suffering. And I certainly don't want to see people pass. And you know, when I see these unemployment numbers and just what's happening right now, my heart breaks. And at that same time, I think we have to find the lessons in this, right? The opportunities for growth and what are the silver linings that we can take out of it. And for me, I felt this incredible resurgence of creativity in a way that I did not expect. And it's really exciting. And I want to be able to capitalize that and use that to do what we do even better and to make more of a difference to even more people.
That's really great. That is really fantastic. Congratulations to everything that you've done. That's really, really amazing. And I know that you're like, I know that we haven't seen each other in a long time, but over the years, through my clients and places that I've gone to speak, I'm like, so what's your background? How did you get into this? What'd you do? Well, I started off with B-School. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. So
thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
It's so cool because one of the things that we'll hear consistently is people find their confidence, right? It gives them this kind of connection point from like they had a dream that wasn't really crystallized and somehow it gets them to that next so they can keep going on their journey. And there's nothing more inspiring than the liberated human spirit. And when that happens, it's just, my goodness, can't get enough of it.
100%. Thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, David. Thank you for all your service throughout the years and how you inspire us and how you keep us moving forward and staying connected to our soul and staying connected to what's possible. You're amazing.
I appreciate you. Thank you very much, Marie.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.